Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihare Madhava Kunja Bihare Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihare Madhava Kunjabihari Gopijana Ballabha Girivardhari Gopijana Ballabha Girivardhari Gopijana Ballabha Girivardhari Gopi Jana Balabha Giribada Dhadi Jasoda Nandana Praja Jana Ranjana Praja Jana Ranjana Jasoda Nandana Praja Jana Ranjana Yamuna Tita Vana Chadi Yamuna Tita Vana Chadi Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hadi Madhava Kunjabi Hadi Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hadi Ya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hadi Gopi Jana Ballabha Girivada Dhadi Gopi Jana Ballabha Girivada Dhadi Jana Ballabha Girivada Dhadi Jasoda Nandana Praja Jana Ranjana Jasoda Nandana Praja Jana Ranjana Dana Praja Jana Jamuna Tiravana Chadi Jamuna Tiravana Chadi Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari Madhava Kunjabi Hari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari Jayom Paramahamsa Hari Vijayacharya Astatara Satasi Srimad His Divine Grace Esi Bhaktivedanta Swami Sira Prabhupada Ki Grantarat Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Gaur Premanandi Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya This morning we'll be concluding chapter 37 from Canto 10. It's been a very lively, profound chapter, like many other chapters in Bhagavatam. And where we are in these last several verses is Krishna's confronting Vyomasura, who was the son of Maya Danava. So he had mystic powers. One of them was he had the mystic power to change shapes. It's one of the eight primary mystic powers, Ashtasiddhis. So he assumed the form of a cowherd boy. He flew over in the sky because he's Vyoma, he knows how to do that too. And he saw some distance west of Mathura, where the cowherd boys were at that time, playing the games. And that particular day was the game of, or at that time at least, it was thieves and robbers. And so there were three groups. There were sheep, there were shepherds, and there were thieves. And the thieves would take the sheep and put the sheep somewhere. So, and they were calling each other bad names. You're a thief. And so on. They were enjoying. While the cows were mooing, I guess, grazing. And Vyoma decided he would take the shape of one of the thieves and steal the cowherd boys that were playing the part of sheep. And he was really good at it. He did it, well, on the one hand and on the other hand. Krishna is omniscient, so Krishna knows everything. And on the other hand, he did in such a way that Krishna didn't notice. And the explanation is Krishna had gone somewhere into the forest to look for missing cowherd boys. And while he was gone, he didn't, you know, see. But Krishna can know without seeing. So in any case, Krishna came back. And he understood right away what's up here. So this is text 30, 10:37:30. Lord Krishna, who shelters all saintly devotees, understood perfectly well what Vyomasura was doing. Just as a lion grabs a wolf, Vyomasura was the wolf stealing sheep. Just as a lion grabs a wolf, Krishna forcibly seized the demon as he was taking away more cowherd boys. No BBT commentary. Vishwanath writes one sentence. Krishna caught Vyomasura just as a lion, Hari, attacks a wolf. Krishna was being aggressive. He's supposed to be peaceful. He was peacefully aggressive. Jiva Goswami writes, understanding Vyomasura's most cruel actions, tasya tat karma, Krishna, who gives himself as shelter, sharana dha, to all devotees, satam, seized him, what to speak of giving himself to those with rare good fortune among the great devotees. Sanatan Goswami writes, another short commentary, Krishna understood the demon's wicked act. He was the shelter of all the devotees. For this reason, he wore a cowherd's dress. Otherwise, he could not protect the best devotees, the cowherds. He seized the demon with force, ojasa. The demon resembled a wolf and was thus compared to a wolf in the example. Text 31. The demon, this is while Krishna is grabbing him, he changed shapes again. The demon changed into his original form, as big and as powerful as a great mountain. But try as he might to free himself, he could not do so, having lost his strength from being held in the Lord's tight grip. No. Krishna at this stage, depending upon which version, he's either between 3 and 4, or he's 11 years, 8 months, depending on which version of the Acharyas you prefer. And in either case, he's small compared to a big mountain in size demon. So Jiva Goswami writes one sentence, though he was strong, Bali, that's the demon, and thought he wanted to free himself, and though he changed to his original form, he could not get free. Sanatana Goswami writes, the demon was like a huge mountain and very hard. Though he was strong, he could not free himself because he was helpless in the Lord's grip. Text 32. Lord Achyuta clutched Vyomasura between his arms and threw him to the ground. Throw a mountain to the ground. Then, while the demigods in heaven looked on, Krishna killed him. How did he kill him? In the same way that one kills a sacrificial animal, which is not a very nice comparison. Pashu maram, as a sacrificial animal is slaughtered. The BBT commentary reads, and the Acharyas inform us that sacrificial animals were killed by means of strangulation. Vishwanath Chakravarti's commentary says, he strangled Vyomasura just as one strangles a sacrificial animal, just as Vyomasura had tried to kill the cowherd boys by suffocating them in a cave by blocking the opening. And in another commentary by Vishwanath, he writes, Krishna killed Vyomasura in the same manner in which a sacrificial animal is slaughtered, Pashu maram. Mara, Pashu Mara. Namely, by suffocation through strangulation, just as Vyomasura had tried to kill the cowherd boys by suffocation when he locked them in the cave. And Jiva Goswami writes, the devatas looked on in joy. They were in the sky, for even then they were hiding out of fear of the demon. He killed the demon like a sacrificial animal by blocking his breath. Pashu maram amarayat. This was very suitable. In that game, for punishing the thief, they would imitate suffocating him for a moment. That's in the game, the thief, and then they catch the thief. And he had almost suffocated the cowherd boys in the cave. Krishna did not stop performing such pastimes. Achyutaha. And the final verse. Krishna then smashed the boulder blocking the cave's entrance and led the trapped cowherd boys to safety. Thereafter, as the demigods and cowherd boys sang his glories, he returned to the cowherd village Gokula. End of chapter. So we heard yesterday, Vyomasura, being the son of Maya Dhanava, had mystic powers, and one of them was a similar mystic power as Brahma's, which was he could take and put in a cave and block the cave with a humongous boulder. You need a mystic power to move those size boulders, but Krishna smashed it. Jiva Goswami writes, he took the boys from the place of suffering, Krishchataha. Krishchataha. Ruya Krishchena Pradampadam. Krishchataha, suffering. Then that was the cave, praised by the devatas and the cowherd boys following him. He entered Gokula with great joy. Pra Vishesha. Gokula is mentioned as Krishna's own, Swa Gokulam, because he was worried times in which he would leave. Interesting. In his heart, he concluded that he would not give up Gokula to go far away. This will be revealed later. The devatas praise him, and he joyfully entered Gokula with the cowherd boys. So stay tuned for finding out how his "I'm going to stay in Gokula" got changed to "I'm leaving Gokula." Sound like Nara did a pretty good job. Sounded like. But Jiva Goswami's reading is not yet. Sanatan Goswami, the final commentary, similar. He took the boys from the place of suffering, Krishnataha, the cave. Praised by the devatas and the cowherd boys following him, he entered Gokula with great joy, Kra Vishesha. Or he entered in a form surrounded by gopis. Gokula is mentioned as Krishna's own Svagokulam because he did not intend to give up the place at that time. So there may be a clue to coming attractions. So that ends chapter 37, and Krishna permitting, we'll start with chapter 38 tomorrow morning. Just some appreciation. You know that last verse at the end of the Govinda prayers, Shriya Kanta Kanta Parama Purusha Kalpataravo. In that verse, Brahma says that in the spiritual world, all trees are desire trees, all stones are wish-fulfilling stones, all walking is dancing, and all talking is singing. You know that. So Jiva Goswami comments, if all their walking is dancing, what's their dancing like? And if all talking is singing, what's their singing like? It's a very special place. And again and again and again, we hear the cowherd boys, along with playing and doing what boys do together, they would sing. And it doesn't say that they were like super good singers or anything, but the subject of their singing, continuous singing, was singing the praises of Krishna. The praises of Krishna for them was his different pastimes. And, you know, they weren't gopis, they're gopas. So they had a regard for Krishna's beauty and Krishna's decorations and Krishna's this and that. And his pastime, you know, stimulations for ecstatic love, in other words, from our teaching of Rupa Goswami. And they were in each other's association always doing that. They were stimulated and they were stimulating others and together hearing and just, you know, self-composed songs, singing the praises of Krishna as they're going with the cows and doing their other activities of praying, of playing. It wasn't like compartmentalized. Now is our singing time and now is our playing time. They were continually in that festive mood. And when they came back, it doesn't say, you know, Vrinda Devi's parrots sent the message back to Braja even before they got there, and the adults were singing, but the adults were singing. Whether it was the Vrinda's parrots or they wait till the boys got there and the boys would sing, and then they would compose their own songs. And sing, and so sing the glories of Krishna. It reminds me a little bit of the style, as far as I understand, the little bit that I understand about the style of Jiva Goswami's Gopalchampu, there's some parts of a champu that's just verses, like poetry, and a short phrase, then a short phrase, and then a short phrase, and then a short phrase, and then it goes back to prose. And then a third thing is a direct quote from Bhagavatam. So it's kind of a, it's not a unstructured composition. It's, there's rules, but following the rules, part of it is it's meant to be sung. And, you know, similar to the writings of Vrindavan Das Thakur or Krishna Das Kaviraj, it's meant for singing, or Bhagavad Gita is meant for singing. So you can recite it, and you can sing it, and sing it, and sing it, and by you know, people like lyrics to songs. I'm pretty amazed, that's a little off topic, but when people, you're riding in a car, and people next to you pull up at a stoplight, and they have this like really loud, whatever it is, rap music, and the person who is the driver, they know the lyrics, and they're rapping with the rap guy or girl. And, you know, so song is just part of culture, whether it's mode of ignorance, mode of passion, or transcendence. And the residents of Vrindavan, they like singing. And their subject is Krishna. And Krishna, subject meaning of is Krishna means everything. You know, Vrindavan Dham and the different relationships and so forth and so on. Just like the chapter that's called The Song of the Gopis, chapter 35, that was really fantastic chapter. Each of the, there's an introductory and a closing verse, but all the other verses are in pairs by design. And it's, the first part is speaking something about Krishna's flute and its effect. And then the gopis are reflecting on the effect and how they feel the those who are receiving that effect are most fortunate, and they're feeling less fortunate. They're not envious. But so part of their song is two sections where they're speaking to Mother Yashoda. And it's not clear. In fact, our acharyas say it could be that they went to Yashoda knowing that she was feeling separation from Krishna, that he hadn't returned yet. And so they were pacifying her in different ways. And then again, so whether they were, they went there or they just were absorbed in thought of her, it is really not so consequential. They were stimulating Mother Yashoda's love. And they're totally not envious. They're totally absorbed in one thing, Krishna's glories, and eager for their association. So on the one hand, the song is when he's not in Braja, he's gone to the forest with the calves or the cows. By that time, it's cows, chapter 35. And so they're singing to relieve their feelings of separation. And then on the other hand, they're feeling ecstatic because of their absorption and remembrance of Krishna. Now, it doesn't like the feelings of separation just went away, but it's very mysterious, the feelings of the residents of Vrindavan. And it's said that in addition to the gopis, they were all like that, because there were times when they were with Krishna, times when they're not with Krishna. And when they were not with Krishna, they were doing the same thing the gopis did. They were singing songs about Krishna, about what he's doing and his thises and his thats, those that are with him at that time, what it's like. And so in one sense, they could know what Krishna was doing while he was in the forest, because they had capacity like Sanjaya had capacity. They had, you know, transcendental television. They could see what Krishna was doing. They could hear what Krishna was saying, and the cowherd boys were saying to Krishna, and the cows were mooing, and, you know, they had remote TV within their hearts. Or they had spies that were following, and the spies would send back messages saying what Krishna was doing. There are different ways of, you know, communicating. But their absorption, this is life in Braja. You know, we like kirtan, and we're encouraged. It is the prime benediction for humanity at large. Those with sufficient brain substance will do this. Engage in the Sankirtan, congregational chanting. But that's life in Braja. And it's not just the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. It's the Bhakti Siddhanta describes, here's a little concluding remark. In that really nice biography, two-volume biography that Bhakti Vikas Maharaj compiled about Bhakti Siddhanta's life, there's one section where there's someone who's been interviewed, and it's their interview is being printed in the book, that says Bhakti Siddhanta was not known for being, you know, a celebrated kirtanier. That's not what his notoriety was. Although he spoke about it constantly. And then he also clarified, not constantly, but he clarified that Sankirtan, two things. Sankirtan doesn't just mean musical performance of chanting of Krishna's names and glories. Sankirtan includes simply discussing Katiyantas Chamam Nityam Tushyanti Charamanticha, discussing Krishna Katha. That's also Sankirtan, which is what he did. And then the second is, he said, apparently more than one occasion, that the name of Hari is Shaktiman, and then the Shakti that is always to be worshipped along with Shaktiman is Harikatha. That's Hari, and there's Harikatha. So there's the name Hari, and Sankirtan of Hari. And then there's the Katha, describing the person, his qualities, etc., pastimes, entourage, associates, his abode, his appearance, his form, exactly what the gopis are doing. That's Hari Katha. That's Bhagavat Katha. That's our Srimad Bhagavatam, which is it certainly makes sense that there's the Vedas are feminine, and the Bhagavatam is part of the Vedas. So the Hari Katha is the internal potency of Krishna, manifesting Krishna or revealing Krishna. There's Sarup and there's Sarup Shakti. So through Sarup Shakti, it's disclosed to us Sarup, Krishna Sarup, the form and etc. of Krishna, form and everything else that's of the form and within the form and manifest through the form. There's the Bhagavad Katha or Hari Katha or Srimad Bhagavatam. That's the Shakti of Shaktiman. It's the Shakti of Hari. So we're associating with Radharani by hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. And Srimad Bhagavatam is the revelation of the personality of Godhead. So we're getting both in one activity. Doesn't mean we don't have the congregational chanting of the holy name, that kind of sankirtan. And it doesn't mean, so we do both. And we have a nice package, Krishna conscious package. So let's see if there's some discussion on whatever you'd like, this topic or something.
Guru Maharaj, in the beginning of class, there was this word that Krishna was aggressive with Vyomasura, and you added peacefully aggressive. So,
Vira. It's one of his qualities.
So I was thinking of it more in terms of peacefully assertive. There are times when the situation demands or requires us to be peacefully assertive. And yet, you know, there really isn't a depth of Krishna consciousness in my heart. But while I wait for that day when, you know, this purity will descend on me, in the meantime, situations where I need to be peacefully assertive, are there some internal checkpoints, some preparation?
And it's the mood. It's not the activity. That's, you know, get really clear. When we become assertive, because we're not pure, with it comes a whole bunch of passion and ignorance. So that's, you know, we may not want to be, check yourself. What's the mood? And even if you check yourself and then, okay, I've got the right mood, it's easy to get carried away just because we're conditioned souls. So what to do? You know, different personalities do different things. Better to err on the side of caution. Like Prabhupada would say to his disciples, I can speak like this, you cannot. I'm thinking of this You're Ever Well Wisher, and there's a scene in the garden in Los Angeles, and Prabhupada's on this little seat, but, you know, elevated seat in the garden, and there's all these professors, and they're trying to appeal to Prabhupada, you know, can you use another word instead of rascal? Like, you know, they've misunderstood or something. I forget how they word it, and Prabhupada just smiles, moves his head, and says, that's just some total of ignorance is rascal. Something like that. And there they take it. Because he had that capacity to speak like that. We don't. And we shouldn't. I'm remembering one of our ISKCON sannyasis spoke something that Prabhupada said when it was in relation to the deprogramming challenge. And Prabhupada said some really heavy things in private about the nature of these people. I won't repeat the language. And this sannyasi repeated it in public form 3 times. And people wrote to me saying, I'm checking out. So I wrote to this sannyasi and said, and he said, well, Prabhupada said it. But, you know, Prabhupada said it in a certain context to a certain group of people, and it wasn't in a Srimad Bhagavatam class. It was, you know, it was chivalry. And he didn't say things like that publicly. Never. But so, back to your question, you know, how do we check ourselves? You go internal to the, you know, what's your tendency? And if the tendency is even when you're checking yourself to get carried away, maybe better just turn your attention to Krishna and pray to Krishna for correction of a situation that's outside of your jurisdiction. That's something that I learned from Bhurijan Prabhu. You know, he's a great teacher. He's a great teacher. In more ways than one, many ways. So I was in Vrindavan teaching at the VIHE several years in a row, and we would have lunch together every day. So something came to my attention, and I asked him, what are your thoughts about this something? Kind of like, you know, something should be done. I don't remember what the something was. And very calmly he said, there are some things that it's between that person and Krishna. And you may have, you know, it's like this, the different circles, circle of influence, circle of concern. So maybe something out there is just something that's of concern to you, but it's not something that you have jurisdiction over. It's not, you can influence. So it's in the category of it's between this person and Krishna. I let Krishna, and turn your, don't lose your Krishna consciousness in the course of pursuing justice or righting a wrong or being a police officer or something like that, blowing your, anyway, even if you're going to be a whistleblower, check yourself and make sure it's coming from the right, which is what your question. Is the mode of service, and the mode of service is to please Krishna and to benefit others. That's not easy place to achieve, but that's the place to check again and again. How are we doing? Yes.
Guru Maharaj, you mentioned...
Take your mask down just when you speak, and you can put it back.
Thank you. So, you mentioned Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur used a very specific term, sacrificial...
He did what?
He used a very specific term, sacrificial animal, for Vyomasura, when Krishna hold it. So when we hear like horse sacrifice, they are given a new body. Can you elaborate why Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur said?
I have no idea. It's news to me. Why in a sacrifice there's strangulation? I have no idea. It's the first I've heard it. I've never heard it before. I have no way of describing. Anyone else?
Maharaj, what are the extra means precautions we have to take while singing before the Lord? Like, for example, Chota Haridas Thakur.
Who?
Chota Haridas Thakur.
Haridas Thakur?
Chota Haridas.
Chota Haridas, okay.
Then he was prosecuted. And because Mahaprabhu could catch his mental, or, you know, status. Similarly, recently I read also Prabhupada mentioned while Lord Brahma was singing for Krishna, he was singing with love and affection. He used particular word in a translation in say verse. Love and affection is required for singing. So, and also you mentioned here, and that means you read two things for Sankirtan, not a musical performance, and another is Tushantisa Ramantisa, that verse. So I was thinking if is there any other things we have to be very careful while singing.
Did you get it? Can you give him the microphone? Shravan, give the microphone to Acharya Nishtha. He's going to relay the message that I got.
What are the specific precautions we have to take while singing before the Lord? It should be done in a certain type of consciousness. Not, he was mentioning Chota Haridas, doing something but not having the right consciousness was a relation. Whereas Brahma mentioned singing with love and affection. So he's asking about singing before the deity.
What's the consciousness of the person who's singing? What should it be?
Yes.
That's the question. Well, in one word, it's bhakti. That is for the pleasure of. For the pleasure of. Who was Narada before he was the young son of a maid servant? Who was he? In his previous life, it's in the Bhagavatam, he was a Gandharva that was really good at singing, and he misused his really good at singing capacity to charm the girls in the heavenly planets. And a sage understood his mood and cursed him. You're a Shudra. Take birth on earth. So he became a Shudra. So, anything, that's just singing, anything, cooking, dancing, decorating, painting, speaking, helping, it's the same principle, the consciousness of for Krishna's pleasure. Anukulyena Krishna Anushilanam, that the essence of bhakti is that. That's the consciousness. And deviation can, of intention, can be messy. But good news is Krishna's kind and he'll kind of bonk us in the side of the head if we get off course. But that's the consciousness. That's your question. You have something? Acharya Nishtha? I don't know how you can understand, but, you know, congratulations.
I know last night you were speaking on a question came up about fear and dealing with other people, other kinds of people, our background, our training. My question is, in our efforts to be relatable, in our outreach, it seems there's a wide variety of opinions amongst our devotees, specifically in terms of like politics. So we don't quite have a unified approach to these things, but these are very topics that can be a very, we get questioned a lot about, or people want to know our view on things, but we don't seem to have a universal or a one perspective, for example, in politics, or it seems that it's kind of up to each devotee what how they see it.
Yes.
And does that ever create, you know, a problem for the public because they hear one devotee says this, another devotee says that?
Well, that's diversity. I just yesterday viewed the interview of Gopal Bhatta Prabhu, the GBC strategic planning team interview of Devamrita Maharaj, and you might want to go there because he says some very interesting things on this topic. But it's one of the things that Prabhupada said we need to give attention to, and if we don't give attention to it, the diversity is going to get broader and broader, not just on things like politics. But you know, you can listen to it. I encourage you to listen to it because it's very, he's very deep thinking person. He's considered things very carefully. It's going to be there. You know, the liberals or the conservatives, or as Brajabihari puts it, peace and pakoras. And, you know, what do you offer to Krishna? Pizza or pakoras? Well, some people say you can't offer. Where are you here in the Bhagavatam? Anybody offered pizza to Krishna? You know, so anyway, there's liberals and there's conservatives with everything. There's people that have different views on everything. And it's divisive. But so part of the thing is that's the reality. There are people that have different views. And so when you're asked a question, what's ISKCON's, the Hare Krishna movement's view on something, you know, politics or whatever. Now, it's good if our communications office has something like, let's say, on abortion or whatever, you know, the role of women, or, you know, issues that are in the world that are hot topics. Black Lives Matter, or, you know, whatever is out there in the current time. It is good to have with those hot flashpoint views, but even within this society, there's not everyone is going to agree with the view of female Diksha Gurus or the role of women, or, you know, how do you respond to Black Lives Matter? I spent a fair amount of time before that slogan came out hearing and then reviewing what interviews were made of three different groups of devotees, Black, African American devotees, and their view on that topic. And I forwarded them to Devamrita Maharaj and asked him, what's your take on all this? And it was a one sentence answer. What else is new? It's an age old, you know, that's him. And he's in a certain type of body that's different than ours. And it's not a new thing. So there's different views. And our position should be, what is Krishna conscious? What is going to be pleasing to Krishna? And are any of the candidates Rajarshis? So they're really not qualified. It's not like shame on them, but it's just the reality that you get on the bandwagon for this political, that political. You know, gun violence. It's totally out of control. So what's our position? You know, let's get on the bandwagon for more gun control, and that, you know, that's not a solution. Our solution is Krishna consciousness. Without Krishna consciousness, this cause or that cause or this issue, that issue, without Krishna consciousness. Okay, what do we do before Krishna consciousness happens? We promote Krishna consciousness. That's what we do. You know, you ask another person, and they're going to have a different view than what I just said. Which is your question. Isn't that going to create confusion out there? People aren't, in ISKCON, aren't unified on some matters. We're unified in some, we're not unified in others. Is that not going to, well, there's diversity. That's the reality. There is diversity.
Just a follow-up, that one area I'm trying to understand is there was in Vedic culture the responsibility of a citizen to their kingdom. Obviously on a transcendental level, Sutapta Nirnam, I forget the verse, one has no obligation to society, forefathers. So on the level of Krishna consciousness, there's no obligation, but prior to that, in a kingdom, one is receiving some support from the state. Is there a responsibility of that individual to either support or just to be aloof? I'm trying to grasp, is there any, does the citizen owe something, or should we just take the position of, well, this is all material, we are transcendental?
Neither. I mean, the calibration of where you stand should be towards our, you know, the King of Kings, Krishna, and our founder Acharya, and that's our, we align that way. And we're in a world of duality where it's not aligned with the founder Acharya and Krishna. And so we're accepting that's the reality. And we live our lives according to the alignment. And then any question, that whatever the question may be, is what's in alignment with that? And therefore, there should be a very careful study of Prabhupada's books, because he is our founder Acharya, and with good reason. And so we're imperfect beings, but we need to know what his, you know, the essence of his, or the big picture of his views on things, not cherry picking, he said this over here and another person says he said that over there and quibble. But what's the big picture, and how do we respect different perspectives on our founder Acharya's position and the mood, the purpose of pleasing Krishna? So that takes pure consciousness. And we're not always going to get it right because we're not in pure consciousness. So we're striving towards that objective. I mean, there's no easy answer to these questions you're asking. I'm just describing principles in response.
Sharampa Swami, in this particular three verses that you'd covered, there was some emphasis put on the method that Krishna had used to kill Vyomasura. And the correlation had to do with the method he'd utilized to cause suffering, so to speak, to the cowherd boys.
Yeah.
And it was very interesting to me to hear that, because, you know, immediately my mind started moving to other times when Krishna has eliminated a particular demon. So, for instance, Agasura, you know, he expanded in his throat just in the same sort of method that somebody in a snake form might use to kill someone. So then that made me think, oh, I should ask you the question. There could be that kind of correlation with the killing of other demons, you know, the particular methods used and their particular means of being aggressive. So I guess the question I wanted to ask was, you don't actually hear the acharyas mentioning that kind of correlation so much, but in this particular case, it was really emphasized. So I was wondering, does that correlation necessarily exist in the other cases of Krishna's method of killing being related to the means of aggression of the particular demoniac entity?
Correlation between what and what?
The method Krishna's utilizing. The method that Krishna, yes, that Krishna's utilizing to kill the particular.
Yeah. Okay. Well, as you were speaking, I was thinking something else.
All right.
I'll just share the something else and we'll go to the method. We find from our Acharya's commentary that Krishna wanted to give Sarupya and Salokya liberation to Agasura. There was many other things going on, but he wanted to do that. And then yesterday we heard with Vyomasura, there's a question King Bahulashva asked Narada, who was this person in the previous lifetime that although he's coming forward as a demoniac person, he gets liberation? And you know, he was a great personality. He was the devotee of Vishnu. But there was pride and he offended and so on. So, there's something behind the scenes that we can't see with the pastime. But by further inquiry and those that know the answer, we can find. There's some deeper picture to what's going on in Krishna's pastimes. So specific to your question about method, well, in some cases, we hear from our acharyas, there is a correlation in the method. And there may be in all cases, I don't know, but not necessarily. In all cases, there's a method. You know, I'm thinking Dainukasura thrown into a tree. I don't know. But he was envious, and he didn't want, because he, our acharyas say, he couldn't reach the tall fruits. So he didn't want anyone to have the tall fruits. So he was thrown into the top of the tall fruit so the tall fruits could fall and the boys could have them. So, remotely, if not directly, some correlation. But there's no obligation from Krishna's side. You know, there may be more, there may be less. Arishtasura broke off his horns and smashed him. Because he was after people with his horns. He lowered his head and aimed his horns at Krishna. So Krishna broke his horns and hit him with his own horns. Kuvayapida just broke off his tusks and whacked him with his tusks and gave one of them to Balaram. Shankachuda, anyway, he had a jewel. There's some detail described in Gopalchampu. That jewel was from the sun god, like the Shamantaka jewel. And it was really effulgent. Anyway, it's. So Krishna took the jewel. But he not only took his jewel, he knocked off his head. So if there's some correlation, there may or may not be. Interesting contemplation. One online, okay.
This is from Satyavrata Das. Is peace and happiness attained from transcendental knowledge and the peace attained from devotional service same? He quotes Bhagavad Gita 4:39.
Well, I guess it depends on where from that transcendental knowledge comes. If the transcendental knowledge comes from speculative efforts, but one may get transcendental knowledge, one may come to the position of knowing Brahman, then it's not the same. But it may come from bhakti directly, and then it's the same. That's it.
Yeah, can I just, yeah. I just had a thought on the question about the animals. There's, you know, this Ashwamedha Yajna, but there's also, we would hear to goddess Kali, often the sacrifice of a goat would be before the deity in a more, perhaps,
gross
way. Just throwing that out there.
Okay. And from the question you asked from last night's class, my understanding, I may have misunderstood the question. The question as I understood it from last night is, supposing you have somebody that has fear of black people. Was that the question?
I heard that bit of the class, and therefore I was just using that as a segue.
Okay, but it was specific to having fear of black people. It wasn't specific about, or wasn't general, just saying that's one example, but okay, just checking, because I don't always, I want to be responsive to questions, and I'm not always clear what the question is that somebody's asking. That's why I ask again. Thank you, Prabhupada Ki.
Jai.
Jai.